Good morning, yes.
Oh, yeah, hold on, let me sit down. I'm on a leg and a half here. It takes me a couple of minutes to get from the front room. Hold on, hon.
Okay.
Okay, good. Now, I can hear you good. I was afraid I wouldn't be able to hear you too good. I got what they call submarine ears.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay, now.
Is Harry...
Okay. I guess you're my gal now for a while. Well, you're just a voice out of me now for... Okay, now go ahead. You ask and I'll answer the best I can.
Okay, now is Harry there with you?
No, he didn't come yet. I was hoping he'd be here. He had something to do about 10:30 this morning. And he said he'd be over here. But I'm sorry, he's not here right now. He may get here. Well, he may, but I don't know. I can't. He's a little bit older than I am. I'm 85, and he's 86.
Okay.
And we're about the last couple of guys that run the fin back up when it was up there in the Aleutians.
Oh, he was on the fin back with you?
Yeah, but he. I'm sorry. He got on the fin back after we left that area. When we got back to Pearl Harbor, we were only up there. I was only up there from May through August, and part of half of that time was on the S-27, the one that sank. And then they put me on the finback when it came up there, and we did a little reconnoitering out there on the western end of the Aleutian Islands here for a while.
Okay. Now, do you want to, would you feel better waiting until Harry came, and do you want me to call back later, or what do you think?
Wait, you want him here with me?
No, that's up to you. I'm just saying...
I'll tell you, he was with me on the Finback after Alaska.
Okay.
After we left Alaska. He was on for the next a year and a half when we went to... Well, we went all through the China Sea area like that, and we went to Australia. But he was not with me in the Aleutians.
Okay. Now, so do you think we should wait for him, or do you want to get started, or what do you think would be the best plan?
No, you can ask me some questions now. I don't believe. I don't think he'll be here. He promises me one thing, and then. Then he ekes out of something like that. I can't promise you anything like that. I told him. I said I wanted you here when this lady calls because he can help me with some things. You have to decide. I can answer some questions for you.
Well, we could do part two if you wanted to later on. If he shows up, we can add him in if that would work.
Okay. Now listen. Let me get this one up. You would rather him to be here.
No, I thought you would rather he was, so I was just trying to be accommodating.
No, not really. I can tell you all I think you need to know. I've written up about this the S boat and how we sank and how we lived in that island for 5 or 6 days before they found us. And I can ask you some questions. Go ahead.
Okay.
You start talking.
Okay. Now, first of all, is it okay if I tape our conversation?
If you what?
If I tape our conversation.
If you tape it. Oh, no. Go right ahead.
Okay. Okay.
You will get nothing but the truth from me. I'm not one of these old sailors that tell sea stories. I'll tell you that right now.
Okay. All right. Well, tell me first, how did you end up getting into service during World War II, getting into the military?
No, wait, you know what? The one thing is I'm a little bit hard of hearing on the phone if you don't talk too fast. I hate to admit that, but I have to. Now, if you say that once more.
Okay. How did you get into military service?
Oh, okay. Okay. You know what? As a kid... I used to watch all these movies when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, the Navy, the Army, the Air Force, and I had a big idea about being a pilot for the Army Air Corps at one time, but that let out because my family couldn't afford the 2 years of college you had to have to get in there. So when the enlistment went down to 17 years old, I immediately, I had finished school, and I, 3 days after my 16th birthday, I enlisted right away in New Jersey at this time.
And what year was that?
That was, well, I'll tell you the date. I enlisted in the Navy on the 27th of May of 1941 in Paterson, New Jersey.
And it was part of your motivation that you thought we were getting into World War II?
Well, no, I didn't. I you know what? The Depression hit my family hard. I was an only child, and we lost everything. We lost our home, and my mother ended up in some kind of an old age home. I don't even remember much of her now since I was 10 years old. My father and I ended up in a rooming house in 1941, and I knew I had to get out of this little place where we lived in New Jersey. And just get away. And at that time, there were posters all around saying you can enlist in the Navy right after your 17th birthday, and if you'll stay 4 years, they'll let you out when you're 21. Well, that looked good to me, so that was an out for me to get away from everything there where I was. So I did that. I enlisted 3 days after my 17th birthday in Paterson, New Jersey.
Okay. So you chose the Navy, right?
I chose the Navy, yeah. You know what, because I started seeing these submarine pictures with I don't know whether you don't remember, Gorsuch, long before your time, but they were making submarine pictures of the Navy in 1938-39 with James Cagney, Pat O'Brien, and those things. One was called Submarine D-1. And that just made I was maybe 14 or 15 then. That just made a deep impression on me, and I wanted to be I guess I was a really an impressionable type of a kid. And I just wanted to do that, is all I can say. And I did it. By God, I did it.
But, so, I guess... You weren't concerned about the small size and the cramped space on the subs?
No, that didn't bother me at all. Nothing. I'm not the type to be sheepish about or afraid about anything like that. I'll do it. I even learned to fly after I got out of the Navy in 1949. But I had to give it up because I had my one bad leg that because of the what happened in the Navy and. I had to give up flying because I couldn't use the toe brakes or the heel, but that's something else. We'll get into that later. Go ahead.
Okay. So what happened after you enlisted? Where did they send you?
Okay. I enlisted in Lower Manhattan in New York City, but there's about 100 or 200 of us there, and they sent us all up to Newport, Rhode Island, the training station. They sent us up on a, would you believe, on an overnight ferry boat on the Long Island Sound. It was a nice trip. We were all rowdy that night, you know, with all talking and joking about the Navy. We were all going to be in the Navy. So we went to Newport, and you got to go through another whole mess of physical tests, mental tests, and all that at that time. And I did the 6 weeks of boot camp training. And came home on 9 days leave after that. And then I had requested submarine school. And I had passed everything there, the physical, mental tests for that. So I got submarine school. And while I was at submarine school, my father died. So I was still 17 then. And so I got a 9-day, what they call a family-type leave. And I went home and I had my father buried, put away the funeral, and all like that. Then I went back and I finished submarine school. And I finished submarine school in October of 1941. And I was sent to San Diego to a division of old S boats. There was the S-27, the S-28, and there might have been the S-34, 35. There was about six S boats there. They were all built 1920s, and they were refurbishing them for the whatever they had in mind. And I was sent aboard that, and almost immediately, the first week I was aboard, the captain, the skipper, said that he was going to be sending me and another fella to school. So the school I was going to was what they call a quartermaster signalman school, and the other guy was going to a diesel engine school, and this was both in Pearl Harbor. So that's when we were sent to Pearl Harbor on an old Liberty type ship, just as passengers like that, and the school lasted 4 months until February, and while I was there. The bombing took place. Now, the Sebring base didn't get hit, so I can't tell you a heck of a lot about that. But we saw everything. We saw Ford Island, the battleships, and the Hickam Field, and all that. Like, we could see it happening over there, but it didn't really bother us because we were at the submarine base. They just skipped the submarine base for some. But I tell you, we made them sorry for that, though, because the submarines sank over 1,100 ships during World War II, and I can tell you a lot about that. That was really an interesting part. Okay, go ahead now. I'm starting to ramble now. You got to interrupt me.
No, you're doing very well. Why do you think they didn't hit the sub base? Did they not know it was there?
Well, no. I imagine they knew it was there with all the spying tactics they used. They just. From the sub base, we could see Ford Island plain as day, where the battleships were, the Arizona, the California, New Mexico, all those. But we could see that plain. And to the south of us, just on the other side of the Navy Yard, was Hickam Field and Schofield Barracks, where they had there was a lot of damage over there. But all we did was just watch. We could see the smoke and the bombs going off, but nothing. It was like they overlooked it. But what they did, they either didn't know we were there, or they must have known we were there, with all the espionage work going on that they did. I would imagine I couldn't tell you why they overlooked us, but they did.
Now you said that. It didn't bother you because they weren't hitting the sub base, but how did you feel watching all this going on?
Well, I'll tell you what, this was just before 8 o'clock in the morning, and we were all out there in the junior men. I was a junior man then; I was only 17. We were all out there in whites for the raising of the flag every morning. This was done every morning at 8 o'clock. And we saw all these planes flying over, and we were wondering, well, you've heard this before, like, what the heck are they doing on a Sunday morning? Don't they ever take time off like that? But then, when they started to hit these Ford Island, which was just across the bay from us, you could see the explosions over there. And we saw the Arizona get hit, that big explosion everybody saw, but we couldn't see the ship because... At the submarine base, there was a big submarine tender there, and it was blocking our view to look across the channel and see the Arizona. The Arizona was just east of us across the channel, and we saw the smoke come up, but we didn't see the big explosion like they keep showing on the films every year.
Mm-hmm. So did it... have a big impact on you as a 17-year-old seeing all this happen?
Now, wait a minute. Say that again, hon.
Did, as a 17-year-old, did it make a big impact on you?
Well, you know, it did. I guess if they'd have bombed us and I seen what happened right off the bat, it might have changed. But this was all maybe a half a mile away. We could see this going on. I would say that Ford Island is about maybe a half a mile across the channel from where we were. And the Navy Yard was just to the south of the submarine base. And Hickam Field and Schofield Barracks were just to the eastern edge of the Navy Yard, standing there watching. We'd go in the barracks and come back out, and go in and come back out. And I can't say I saw a lot of badness, because I didn't. It was all from far away. I didn't see no real badness until I got on the submarine, until we went to sea to look for the enemy.
Okay.
That's when we started seeing different things. I can tell you a lot about that.
Okay, so you stayed in Hawaii until February?
Right, February. Okay, now in February the school was over. The school was from October, around the 1st of November, till around the end of February. I'm sorry I can't get these dates exact now, but
Okay.
Now, after they bombed on December 7th, a Sunday, the school closed down for a week because, you know, I was 17 years old and I was one of the junior men. They sent us over to the Navy Yard to help with all the cleaning up. So for a week there, all I did was, well, a bunch of us did, was just push brooms and clean up, sweep, because it was a mess over there where the dry docks were. It was a real mess. And when the school, then, after that was over, about December the 14th or 15th, the school started again. And we finished it until around the end of February. And I was put on an old steamer, the type ship, a Liberty ship, you know. And we were sent back to San Diego. And I went back aboard the S-27. And we stayed there till May the 20th. And we left the 20th of May for the Aleutian area. And then on the 24th, I had my 18th birthday. I guess that was on the way up to Seattle. We stopped in Seattle because we had some trouble with the boat on the way up. We stopped in Bremerton, Washington, which I believe they had a big Navy yard there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there a few days, and then, after leaving there, we headed for the Aleutian area, Dutch Harbor, and we arrived in Dutch Harbor a day after the bombing took place there. And the dock where we tied up to had a little bit of damage, but not much. You just had to be careful where you walked like that. And I guess we were only there a few days, and we went to sea again. And we were only at sea maybe 7 or 8 days. Off Amchitka Island, when our mishap started, it's funny. We were submerged all day, and you come up at night to charge batteries, and you go. So it was all enemy territory around the Kiska Island. We would surface at night and just lay to in the water and charge batteries. At that time, that old S boat, it couldn't. Go forward or it couldn't have any propulsion while charging a battery. We just had to lie to in the water. And while we were laying to in the water, we drifted close into land. And the visibility was no, we couldn't see it enough. We had no radar at that time or anything like that. And we drifted in toward the southeastern coast of Amchitka. And as soon as the battery charge was over, about 2:30 in the morning, we went ahead on one engine, and we almost immediately struck a reef area, rock area, and it hulled the boat, hulled the forward part of the hull, and we started taking on water. And it didn't sink right away, but in 6 hours, we knew we had to get off that boat, so it was a funny thing. We had one rubber life raft, and we had to go back and forth we were off the southeastern coast of Amchitka. It was really a rocky area, a crummy area. There was inhabited, there were nothing, there were no animals and no nothing. It was just cold water and rocks, it seemed like. And we finally got the crew off of there back with two or three men back and forth in this one little rubber life raft we had.
And how many guys were on the sub?
Go ahead now. What now?
How many guys were on the sub?
50.
50, okay.
Five-oh. Wait a minute, hold on. I think this is Harry now. Hold on.
Okay.
Hold on.
Okay.
I hope that's you, Harry.
Yeah.
Okay, hold it. Here's Harry.
Okay.
Yes, Jen, this is Harry.
Hi, Harry. Do you mind being part of our conversation today?
Well, I think George could have handled it.
do you mind being part of it, though?
Oh, I guess not. I'm here.
Okay, and is it okay if I tape your conversation?
You can do anything you want.
Okay, and Harry, what's your last name?
S-U-O-M. Hi, sue me.
Oh, I thought that was just your email handle.
No, it's sue me H.
Okay. So, Harry was just telling me about the sinking of his sub at off Amchitka, but when we get to the Finback, can we ask you some questions too?
Sure.
Okay.
George was on it before me, but first I didn't get on the Finback until we got back to Pearl Harbor after starting second patrol.
Okay.
Amber.
Okay. So George, you were telling me about the your sub grounding off Amchitka and trying to lighter men into shore.
Going into what now?
Taking guys in the raft two at a time into shore.
Yeah. We after the battery charge was over, we attempted to go ahead because I told you the S boats have to lie to in the water in order to charge the battery. You cannot go ahead on the propellers. Okay, so when we went ahead, we immediately struck a reef because we could. It was pitch black and you couldn't see anything. There were no lights around and nothing, and we immediately struck a reef and the boat was hulled. And we knew we were in some kind of trouble right off the bat because the engine room started to flood, the bilge started to flood. But it wasn't a rush. It was not a rush to get off the boat. It didn't sink right away. We had plenty of time. But we knew it was going down. It was not going to last like that. But that's it now. Go ahead. Now ask another question.
So tell me about trying to get everybody off the ship and into shore.
Okay, now the boat sank. It sank to the bottom, but understand the water was not that deep. The stern of the boat was down under the water. The bow was still sticking up a little bit, so we could we spent maybe another day or so with the rubber raft going back and forth and getting supply, but we could get off the boat before the salt water got into the battery area and started manufacturing this chlorine gas. You heard of that. And chlorine gas is poisonous. So once we detected that, I guess after the second day, we made no more trips back to the boat. That was it for the boat. so we had to leave it there. But we got a lot of store. We got plenty of food off. We got warm clothing. Well, we didn't really need it then, the warm clothing. But we got the food was the main thing. We got a lot of canned food, so we really weren't hurting. We ate okay. We had two meals a day. Go on. Well, that was a little later on. Go ahead. We got all the food off, but we were in this area where you couldn't stay there. Now, a day or two before all this happened, we had reconnoitered Constantine Harbor on Amchitka, where they had a little Aleut village there, of maybe six or seven houses, little small houses, and a church. And evidently, the Japanese had dropped a stick of bombs there, and three or four of the houses were destroyed. So when we went aground on the other side of the island, we had to walk across the island carrying all our supplies, food, whatever we got. And we lived in these houses and the one small church there. It was like a little, I guess there were six houses and one church is what it was. And three of the houses were destroyed by somebody dropped a stick of bombs. And I still don't know whether it was the Japanese or whether it was the Americans. I don't know, but I know there was six or seven bomb craters across there, and three of the homes were destroyed. So that's where we lived. That's where we stayed for 6 days until they found us. And they found us by act. We had sent out about six messages with the radio on the S-boat, but only one of them was received, and that one message didn't give any position, just that we had grounded on the southeastern, off the southeastern end of Amchitka Island. Okay. What else now, babe? Excuse me for saying that.
Were you able to get any personal possessions off the boat, or just essential things like food?
Was I nervous?
No. Did you get only essential things off the ship, or could you get personal effects also?
Oh, no, we got, you know, personal effects. I had just bought a $29 set of dress blues in San Diego in October of 1941. And they could, well, $29, and I was making $36 a month, $46 a month at that time. So that was a big hunk of money. I made sure I got those dress blues off the boat, but everything else I lost. My dungarees, another pair of shoes, underwear, skivvy socks, toiletries, all that, I left there. The only thing I got off the boat of mine was that suit of dress blues. That cost me $29.
That was a big purchase in those days.
It was. But I saved it. It's a screwy thing, though, I guess.
So everybody got off the sub?
Did everybody?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Nobody was hurt. Nobody lost their life. We lived fairly comfortable, almost, I would say, in these houses. It seems like I guess it was Aleut. The Aleut people. You know more about this than me now. They left all these school books, like for little children, with pictures of animals, but it was all in Japanese. So I don't know whether they were teaching the people Japanese language there, and I couldn't say that. But I'm just sorry I didn't pick up some of these books and take them with me. But I, at 18 years old, one doesn't think that like that. Like I could have saved some of that, what they had there.
So,
go ahead, hon.
So yeah. did you think you were gonna make it out of there okay?
Did what, hon?
Did you think you were gonna be rescued?
You know, at 18, yes, I did. I figured we'll be here a while and somebody will find us, because they knew we had they knew that we had went aground and the boat had sank, and they knew we were living on some, but they didn't know exactly where we were, and we were located by one Navy airplane that evidently had just flew over to get a fix and find out where he was, and he found us by accident, really. And the one sad thing, though, this flyer that found us himself was lost later, in August of 1942. And I'm sorry about that. And I'm online once in a while with a younger relative of his that never knew him. His name was Julius Raven, R-A-V-E-N.
Do you know what happened to him?
Yes, he did. He lost his life. He lost his life 2 months later. Remember I said he found us on June 24th. We sank on the 19th, and we lived on the island until June 24th, until he found us there. And he landed in you're familiar with Amchitka, Constantine Harbor. He landed in Constantine Harbor, and there was an old dory there that was a rowboat that was really an old worm-eaten thing like that. So we one or two of us rowed out. I wasn't one of them, but we rowed out the way he had anchored his airplane in the water. And I hope this all makes sense. And we introduced ourselves, and he took about 12 or 13 of us back to Dutch Harbor from Manchica. That's a, I guess that's a 6 or 7 hour flight, whatever it is like that. And the next day, three more airplanes come back, and then picked the rest of us up and flew us all back to Dutch Harbor. I made sure I took my suit of dress blues with me. Right.
So, did you ever see Japanese planes come over when you were stuck on Amchitka?
No, we saw aircraft maybe 6 or 7 miles away. But theirs or ours, we never knew really what they were. The only aircraft that came close was this one American PBY aircraft that he said he flew over to get a fix, that he might have been a little bit lost. And that's the reason he was over there. And we saw was an American plane, so we're all out there on the beach waving. I'm not going to ever forget that. That was we were glad they finally knew where we were. That was the main thing.
Yeah, I bet that after you'd been there 5 or 6 days, you were probably ready to get back to civilization.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, you know, we weren't hungry. We had the food, and it was almost, well, I'm not going to say comfortable, but it was myself and two other guys. We lived in some kind of a dugout that they had the people who lived there before had dug into the side of a hill there, and we lived pretty comfortable, I guess. That's a funny thing. We didn't see no animals or nothing at night there. No birds occasionally, but there was nothing on that island at all. I guess.
What month were you there?
What now?
What month was it that you were there?
What did she say?
What time of year?
Oh, okay. We went aground on the 19th of June, and we were found on the 24th. And that's when the one plane found us, landed, and he took back about 13 or 14 of us. And the next day, three more came back and picked up the rest of us and took the rest of us back to Dutch Harbor.
And then what happened in Dutch Harbor? Were you reassigned?
Okay, well, Dutch Harbor, there was going to be a court-martial on our captain. His name was Herbert Jukes. There was going to be a court-martial set up because he went aground and lost his ship. But it was all dropped because it was so foolish. It was an old boat, was built in 1924. It had no radar, no pyrometer, no anything really. If we didn't see the sun or the stars, we were lost. And that's what we did. We had bad weather there for 2 or 3 days, and we couldn't see anything. And the night of the 18th of June, we lied to in order to charge batteries. like I said before, and we immediately struck a reef, and the boat was hulled, and that was the end of that. That was the boat was doomed all after that. There was no saving it at all.
So you didn't think it was your
time, and it sank all the way to the bottom, but the water was not. It didn't completely go under. You follow me?
Yeah.
The forward part of the boat was still up, and we could. We all got up on deck. We were okay.
So you didn't think it was the captain's fault?
We what now?
You didn't think it was the captain's fault what happened?
I definitely not. Absolutely not. No. No. There was a court-martial, and there were a lot of questions asked, and it was decided that in no way. In fact, he was given command of another submarine. I did know the name. I could look it up and find out, but anyway. And he had some success. He sank several ships on another submarine after that.
So it sounds like you didn't stay with him.
No. But after they brought us back to Dutch Harbor, some of the senior men were sent back to the States for what they called new construction. They were building a bunch of new submarines at that time, different parts of the country, in California, on the East Coast. But the junior men, myself being one, I the Finback pulled in then. I'm going to say early July. And myself and another man went aboard the Finback. Harry knows this guy, Rocco Pye. You remember Pye, Harry?
Yeah.
Me and Rocco Pye went on the Finback. And I stayed on the Finback for another year and a half. And I lifted in Fremantle, Australia. And Harry stayed on. He can tell you more about what happened afterwards on the Finback.
So you got on the Finback at Dutch Harbor?
I did, yes.
And then where did you go from there?
Okay. Well, right away, we continued the patrol on the Finback, which they were patrolling the Eastern Aleutian Islands out by Adak, Atka, and all that out there.
Uh-huh.
And we made one attack on a Japanese destroyer. That was not a success. We didn't get any hits, and we were bombed by an aircraft once or twice. That's all in the ship's log. I could give you the dates if I looked it up. But we were bombed by aircraft, and we made an attack on one Japanese destroyer, which was unsuccessful.
Okay. So how long were you on patrol and Finback in the Aleutians?
Okay, now let me see now. We were still, I guess we didn't leave the Dutch Harbor, the Aleutian area, till around the first week in August. And then we headed straight for Hawaii, Pearl Harbor. We patrolled during July and a little bit of August when we ended up in Pearl Harbor.
Okay. So do you remember any? You didn't have any hits in the Aleutians then, right? You said.
I didn't any what?
You didn't take down any ships or planes and well I guess not planes.
No. None. We didn't. We in fact on the S boat we didn't see any ships. All we saw was aircraft they never came close or anything to see any to bother us. In fact the S boat we had all we did was just look at Amchitka and we looked at Kiska at one time but. We saw no enemy at all while I was on the S boat.
Okay. And is Finback of the same era as SS 27? Or was it a more modern ship?
Oh, no. The Finback was much newer. Finback was commissioned I think it was the first boat that was commissioned after Pearl Harbor. I'm not certain of this, but I'm pretty sure it was.
Silver Sun.
Was what now?
Silversides first.
Yeah, it was built in Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Okay. And so you went back to Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, after the after in the Aleutian area on the Finback, we returned to Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
For a minor refit and a rest. We had a couple of weeks rest in a hotel, and then we'd go back out to sea again.
So is that where you met up with Harry?
That's right.
Yeah, I was transferred on the Finback starting the second patrol.
So where did that patrol take you then?
Well, we ended up in Fremantle.
Second patrol.
Second patrol, we come back to either Midway or back to Pearl. I don't remember.
Wait a minute, hold it. The second patrol was over in the China Sea, the East China Sea, South China Sea, Formosa area. And we were there for maybe 60, 70 days. We returned. I think we came back to Midway after that, and we stayed at Midway, didn't we?
I think so.
I think, yeah. We rested at Midway for a while. They had a lot of submarine rest camps where the guys would come in and you'd get 2 weeks left, you'd rest, you could swim, whatever like that. Midway Island was one at that time. And we stayed there for 2 weeks, and then we go back out to sea again for a couple of months. The third patrol, I guess we were down in the Caroline Islands, where Guam, Saipan was all in Japanese hands at that time. And all those southern islands were like in New Georgia and all that for the third patrol. Fourth patrol was this, we might have returned to the China Sea again on the fourth patrol. But that's when we started sinking ships. The first ship I sank was with Harry. It was in October of 1942. We sank a ship just between Formosa and the Chinese coast. I keep saying Formosa. That's Taiwan. Today it's called Taiwan.
Right, okay. So were you part of that? Did you know what was going on?
Did what now?
How many guys were on Finback?
What, 65? 66, I think.
No more.
But later on, no more. But when we went to Dutch Harbor on the Finback, there were 66 guys in the crew. Later on during the war, they started making the crew a little bit bigger.
Okay.
I guess sometimes 70, a little bit over 70, I suppose. Right, Eric?
90
on some of the big... Oh, man, yeah.
So with that many guys on the...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. With that many guys on the sub, did you know what was going on? Did you know that you were in attack mode?
Oh, sure. Constantly. We wouldn't surface till after sunset, and we wouldn't dive till before sunrise. Eh? So we made one of them patrols for 89 days.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I think that's the day that patrol that we lost all our sugar because we dove with the hatch open. We couldn't get it shut, so we almost had it that time. And all the sugar was in the dry storeroom by the radio shack going out from the control room, so we lost it all. We had no sugar.
I bet you were pretty sorry about that.
Not really.
No?
No. No.
Well,
you
couldn't...
You don't think of those things.
No. Mm. He's right, you know. We were both 18 then.
Yeah. Leaving the hatch open like that could have been deadly for the sub?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But
you know, when you're 18, you're going to live forever.
Right. But it sounds like somehow you got it closed, and so the mission wasn't...
Well, as soon as the chief on the manifold seen the water coming down the lower hatch, he immediately closed the vents and started blowing. So we got it back up to the surface.
Mm-hmm. So how do these subs function? Were you down deep and on attack during the day, and then at night you came up and surfaced?
You're always got at periscope depth during the day, and if you've seen the contact, you tried to get around it so you can fire a torpedo. Sometimes you had to surface and bend on four engines, flank speed, to get ahead of the convoy or the ship, and then dive and then fire if you can get into position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, Harry, what was your job on the sub?
I was a torpedoman.
Okay. So you were well aware of what was going on and
he was always full of grease.
I was a young seaman there, and I was standing lookout watches. I think I miscooked the first patrol. After that, I stood lookouts.
Okay.
Helmsman.
And George, what was your position on Finback?
I was a little bit higher. I was the quartermaster. Well, I'll tell you what, he mentioned about the hatch being closed. That was my fault. That was we made a dive in January in 1943. We were someplace in the China Sea there in the area of Taiwan, and there was an improper closing of the hatch as we dove, and water poured in, and I was washed down into the control room, and when we finally got the hatch shut, Harry was left up there in the conning tower with water up to his waist. This sounds like a movie story, but this is all actual truth. Whatever you hear from me or Harry is the absolute way it happened.
Well, did you get in trouble for that?
Did what?
George didn't get in trouble because it was a junior man that we picked up in Pearl before we left patrol because we were one short quartermaster on the bridge, and he was kind of drifty. So it was all his fault because he was supposed to check the dogs on the hatch when he went down. And George was the last one when we pulled the plug to dive. George was the last one on from the bridge, and he closed the hatch. But the dogs were halfway out. So the latch couldn't grab. The hatch couldn't seat properly.
And let me tell you, I did the same thing on the S-boat. Closed the hatch on a dive, and I had no trouble on the S-boat. It was a little bit different, a little bit easier, because it's an older type boat. But on the Finback, it was the way this thing worked, it was a little bit different to me. And whether I got proper instruction, I'll never say, because the guys I sailed with were a wonderful crew, I'll tell you that right now. I'd never say anything against none of them. I was a junior man. I was 18 years old at that time, and I can blame nobody but myself. Whatever happened at that?
No, it wasn't George's fault. It was a guy that he relieved on the bridge that should have checked the dogs on the hatch. So George wasn't at fault.
Well, thankfully, you all lived through it, right? So that you and it didn't happen again.
Well, we had another close contact with the enemy on the next patrol. I happened to be on the bridge and lookout at the time, and I hollered plane, and we dove. We got down to periscope depth, and he blew us right back to the surface.
Yeah, remember that.
With his bombs, and if he'd had one more, he'd have had us.
Yeah.
So we had lost our main hydraulics. So we were cranking hydraulics on the stern planes and the bow planes by hand. And I'd be darned that we got her back down again, and like I say, if he had had one more bomb, George and I wouldn't be here.
Wow. And where was this at?
South China Sea somewhere.
Yeah, right. Probably between Taiwan and the Chinese coast. There was two China Seas, the North China Sea, no, I'm sorry, the East China Sea and the South China Sea area. And it was probably in between what they called at that time the Formosa Strait, that was when Taiwan was called Formosa.
Okay.
We were actually on our way to our patrol area. So.
Well, your ship was credited with a lot of kills, wasn't it?
Well, one patrol, supposedly we got 6 out of 7 ships in the convoy.
Wow.
But whether they give us that credit, we don't know. You'd have to look at the patrol reports.
I see. Okay. So, was Finback associated with rescuing George Bush?
Yes,
yeah.
So that made you famous in a sort of way.
Well, George and I got off. George got off in Australia, and I got off in Pearl when it went into 1010 dock for overhaul. And they split the crew up. Half went on vacation over in the States, and the other crew stayed aboard to help with overhauling the boat. And when I come back, I was in the second cruise, and when I come back, the boat was gone already. So I was transferred off to Finback. That happened about the second patrol after the overhaul. But we did get the invitation to the inaugural and all the other functions, and Christmas cards a couple years in a row.
Okay.
Now listen, let me say, I'm a Democrat.
He's a Republican. We don't get along.
So George Bush, now I wasn't there when he was picked up, but they picked up, this was in September of 1944 when they picked him up. And they also had picked up four other flyers. And George Bush, evidently you could tell was a Joe College type, came from a higher plane and family like that, and he didn't mix with the rest of the crew. And it's tough not to mix with the rest of the crew if you're on a submarine, because you're always rubbing elbows with somebody. It's so small. But he didn't. He wasn't a mixer. The other four guys, they mixed well with the crew. They came back after, go to the engine room, the motor rooms, and the torpedo rooms, and talked to the guys like that. But George Bush was just the opposite. Now, I could be talking like a Democrat, so I'll let up here like that. That's just my impression. I wasn't there. I'm just getting it from the guys that were there.
Okay.
I was at that time. I was on another submarine called the Pacuda.
Okay.
And we were doing our thing on that boat.
Well, you both spent a lot of time on subs. How was it to live in such cramped quarters for a long time?
Well, that's why they send you. It's all voluntary. When you volunteer for submarines, they send you to a couple of shrinks first, see if you're mentally fit and qualified to serve on submarines.
Didn't you miss the breeze, the ocean breeze and the sun and all that?
No. No, you can get accustomed to that right very quick. You feel better when you're submerged.
Okay, because I've been on them, in museums, walked through them, and boy, it sure seems like tight quarters.
Yeah. Well, I'd done 20 years on them, then I went to work for the old electric boat division, and I come down to the Cape, and I rode submarines out of the Cape here for 23 years.
Electric boat, what, were they in, they were in Groton, Connecticut?
Groton, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or Groton? Okay.
Yeah. That's a nice area there, yeah. I was always on submarines from 1941 until 1947. That's when I told you I was in this automobile accident, and I was forced out of the Navy with a medical discharge because my leg never came around to their satisfaction, so I had to leave the Navy. But I stayed in, and well, 41 to 47, I like that. And I never saw a nuclear boat, never had nothing to do with them. Harry knows all about the nuclear boats. I don't.
Oh, so, George, you spent about 6 years then on subs before you were discharged because of your accident?
Well, if you count submarine school, yeah.
Okay.
October 41, and I left in... I got hurt in December of 1947 when I was on a boat called the Amberjack in an automobile accident. And I spent a year and a half in the Newport Naval Hospital, and I never recovered enough to their satisfaction to return to duty. So I was given a medical discharge.
Oh, good. That must have been a terrible accident.
Well, I'll give you a couple of sentences on it. We had bought a 1940 Buick sedan. It was a nice blue and white one. And I had just gotten a Connecticut driver's license. And I wasn't, well, the two of us did like that. So we went up to Hingham, Massachusetts to buy some civilian clothes, because at just about that time, the Navy had decided that we were allowed to wear civilian clothes when we were away from the boat, or in town or some place like that, leave on Liberty. So I bought two suits, I bought a top coat and some sweaters, and would you believe this was all less than $100 for all this now. And on the way back from Hingham, Massachusetts to New London is when we had this accident. There were four of us in the car, and two of us, I was driving, two of us in the front seat were hurt seriously and ended up in Newport Naval Hospital. And the two guys in the back seat were asleep when it happened, and they weren't injured at all.
Hmm.
I'm giving you a straight up what happened, because I'm not going to tell a story. I fell asleep at the wheel. And we hit a trailer truck head on, right about on Route 15 at the Connecticut Rhode Island state line.
Wow.
This was the 3rd of December. And the next thing I knew, it was about the 7th or 8th of December. And I was in Newport Naval Hospital.
Sounds like you're lucky you survived.
Yeah, well, yes, I am. Yeah, I guess I am lucky I survived. Of my own foolishness, I suppose. But, you know, what was I? I was 23 years old at the time. You know, foolish youth, whatever.
Yeah. Yep, we've all been there. So Harry, tell me, when did I'm sorry, George. What after Finback? Then you went to Picuda.
Yeah, I got off the Finback in Fremantle, Australia, and I was sent. This was in This was July in 43. July or something like that. Yeah, July in 43, and I was sent back to the States. And a 30-day leave. I got home, see Mom and Pop and all that like that. And I was given an assignment to a new boat that was being built up at Portsmouth Navy Yard, New Hampshire. And it was finished in December of 43. And in January of 44, we took it back around to Pearl Harbor. And we got back into the war again. And we on that boat sank another... I think it sank another 12 ships. I have to look that up, too. We sank another 12 ships before. And I left that boat at Pearl Harbor sometime in early 1945. And I was sent home again. And that was the last time I was in Hawaii until my wife and I went there again in about 1983.
Did it look a lot different to you?
Absolutely.
I bet.
Absolutely. It was like going there a first time again. Because I didn't know where they were. Well, you've been to Hawaii, probably.
Yes.
Kapi'olani Boulevard, the main one that goes by down through Waikiki area.
Right.
That was just a two-lane highway. In 1941, I remember, but back then in 1983, it was a split six-lane highway, something like that. Now, all that,
yeah.
all the way through.
Big changes. Now, Harry, what happened after you got off Finback?
Off the Finback?
Yeah.
I come back on 30 days leave, and I went back out there, and I got in the submarine relief crew. On the Fulton, and on the Fulton, and it went out to Majuro to start a submarine base there. And I was there about 4 months, and they called me up at the personnel office, and they says, "How would you like to go back to States for new construction?" I said, "Send me quick." So I come back and put the USS Chubb in commission, and went back out there and made a few more patrols, and I ended up in the Philippines on a tender when the war ended. But I stayed 20 active, and I put the last submarine commission was, or the first missile boat, nuclear missile submarine. And I made the first launches at the Cape, and made the first patrol, and I had my 20 years plus in, so I retired.
So you saw a lot of changes in subs over those years.
Oh, yeah.
Were you pretty happy when the war ended so that you could get back to the States?
Well, yeah, I had a wife and little boy.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'll tell you something. I was in the States when the war ended. I was at the submarine base in New London. I was instructing at the submarine school on one of what they call the school boats there. We would take the young people, the young sailors out to sea for a day and show them dive and show them all the ins and outs of a submarine. And I was there. I was at New London at the sub base there when the war was over. And that was one wild time. We went into New London that night, and everything. I kissed so many girls. I couldn't tell you where I started or ended like that. But it was one wild time.
George is a lover anyway.
No. I was brought up in the city, so I'm good at that. Whatever.
Now, you guys spent so much close time together on these subs with other people. Did that make for good friendships, or did it mean that you were sick of those people by the time you got away from them?
No, very good camaraderie.
You're right.
Yep.
You're right. I could depend on Harry, and he could depend on me.
So,
except for that one time when I screwed up on closing the hatch.
So when the two of you split up and went in different directions during the war, you somehow got back together after the war?
Well, I come down to the Cape. I was working for Electric Boat Division of General Dynamics after I retired off to George Washington. And the NAVC asked for four people to come down to take care of the submarines that come in, the missile subs. And I volunteered, and my boss would let me go. He says, "The only qualified man I got." So the first four people came down, and they come back to the shipyard for about 3 months. And I said, well, they were getting $14 a day per diem. I said, well, I got to get some of that money. So I pinged on my boss for a couple of months. He says, "I can't let you go." Finally, about 2 weeks before the guys were supposed to come back to the Cape, I asked him once more, well, let me go ask the manager. He said, well, we'll let him go, but if it doesn't work out up here, he's coming back. So I stayed down here for 23 years and rode every submarine to come in. That was the first Freedom 41 missile boats, and then the first eight Trident boats.
Wow. Must have been a pretty good place to work then.
Well, when we didn't have a submarine, we went to Rota, Spain, Holy Loch, Scotland about four times. And all the shipyards, we checked to overhaul boats or new construction. We made the inspection and say, yeah, you're ready to go to sea.
Okay, so that's what your job was? You were an inspector on these subs?
More or less, yes.
Okay.
Now listen, I have to tell you one thing. The best time I had, well, in the Navy, was in 1946 when I put the new boat, the Amberjack, in commission. We spent 3 months in South America. We went all the way down to Rio de Janeiro, Buenos Aires, and we saw a lot. It was a good trip. It was amazing. We had a good time. We had a lot of different types of food and everything, and we made a lot of different stops. I'm going to send you a list of the I got the stops we made all up and down the coast, all the way down from. From Rio all the way down into Buenos Aires and that other I have to look that up, but it's right there. But we had a good time. It was good.
Sounds like you both saw quite a bit of the world during World War II.
Yeah, through the periscope.
Yeah,
right.
Maybe a very small bit
right.
of it, huh?
Yeah.
I wasn't lucky. I didn't get any of those cruises.
Oh, did you get much time on land?
I had 2 years of shore duty in 20.
Wow.
That's all.
And did you have any George mentioned that he had R&R on Midway Island. Did you have similar experiences?
Oh, yeah. Midway was with him Midway, and I was down in Australia with him, and also the Royal Hawaiian, Pearl.
Yeah, we also stopped in Guam, Saipan, in later on in the war when the Marines took it back over again from the Japanese. Guam, Saipan, Midway, and Fru. Mantle. I guess that's the only places I stopped during the wartime, anyway, during the war.
Did you guys see remnants of war there when you stopped?
Oh, yeah. All the battle wagons over there.
And had you known what had gone on there? Did they keep you up to date?
Well, George was there when the Japanese bombed the battleship Roe there.
Well, yeah, you see, I went through all that. Yeah, that's again, at the submarine base, I'll say that again, we weren't hit. We could watch what was happening all around us. The Navy Yard was just across a channel that they call Makapuhu Channel. These Hawaiian names get me all screwed up anyway. Something like that, Wakapuhu Channel, and the Navy Yard was just...
Waipahu.
Waipahu, yeah, something like that, yeah. Whatever like that, all these channels.
George comes along out and gets confused.
Well, I told her she's gonna have to look up in a dictionary to understand what the heck I'm saying. Being New York, yeah.
Now, what about on Midway and Saipan and other places that you stopped? Did you see evidence of war there too?
Oh yeah, all the buildings were
right. Listen, let me tell you about Midway. When we first went, Harry and I went to Midway for the first time together, 1942. I guess it was September or something like that, yeah. And you could see the damage that the Japanese had done with the bombing. The hangars were all bent and blown up, destroyed, and it was a mess for a while there.
Yeah, because you were there only a few months after the Battle of Midway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we were there. I'm pretty sure we were there in September, well, late September in 42 or early October for the first time. I can't give you the exact dates. I'd have to look them up.
Okay. Now tell me, what did you both think about the accommodations and the food on these subs that you served on?
We had the best food the Navy could
Right. get. Right. You had guys that would do a lot of bitching, if you'll pardon the expression. But I'm not one to complain. I grew up during a depression, and you put a peanut butter sandwich in front of me and a glass of milk, and I'm happy. Whatever. The food we had were good. A lot of guys would do, not a lot of guys, one or two here and there would complain. But the vast majority of the crew, the food was okay for. We did all right.
When you left Pearl Harbor, you had fresh milk and you had fresh eggs for the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
After that, on the entire rest, the patrol, you had powdered eggs and powdered milk.
That sounds grim.
Listen, you couldn't tell. I couldn't tell the difference. Some guys could. I couldn't. I didn't know.
How long were you out on these missions on the sub?
Oh, anywhere you. Long as if you had poor hunting, you were out there at least for 60 to 70 days at a time. And if you had good hunting, you could be back in 36 days.
So if the more ships you took down or the more enemies
right.
you hit, the quicker you could go back to port?
Well, because you got rid of your torpedoes.
Oh, right. It seems like if you were out 60 to 70 days, though, it would be awful darn hard to have enough supplies.
Well, you were...
Well, yeah, they were tucked everywhere, stuffed under bunks, and we had canned food everywhere.
And everything like meat and stuff like this was just thrown, they take it out of the boxes, just thrown down the cool box, the freeze box. So they looked terrible, but the cook was pretty good. He done a good job of cooking.
Huh. And did you eat in shifts?
Well, yeah. You stand, we had three sections. So one section's on watch, and next could be eating and sleeping or resting. And you stood four on and eight off. So if you're standing a 4 to 8, you had 4 to 8 in the morning, 4 to 8 in the afternoon. You know?
Mm-hmm. As a torpedo guy, Harry, did you stay right there where the torpedoes were?
Oh, sure.
That's where your bunk was?
We slept them on. We slept on top of them.
Oh, boy.
Just about. On the Finback, I slept in what they call the after battery compartment on the Pacuda in 1944 and 45. My bunk was in the after torpedo room. We had two torpedo rooms, forward torpedo room, which would be in the front of the ship, and the aft torpedo room, which would be in the stern, the back of the ship, like that. And the bunk I slept in at the Pacuda, you couldn't go any further back. I slept in the top bunk on the port side. And Harry will tell you that's as far back as you can go. Right under what they call the steering meter, the steering plane's motor. What was that called again? Motor generator, yeah. Wasn't that what?
No, the hydraulic rams.
Man, we are getting old.
Yeah, the hydraulic rams for the rudder and the stern planes.
Huh.
So when we submerged, they're constantly going.
Yeah, you always had hydraulic oil dripping into your bunk if you slept in a top bunk.
Oh, jeez.
That was interesting, yeah.
So you had very little personal space.
Well, that's right. Most of the time, you had a leather cover over your mattress, and most of the guys didn't even bother unzipping them. They just crawl up in their clothes, sleep in their clothes.
And
now, listen, Jan, we would paint messages on the warheads of the torpedoes. You know what a torpedo looks like?
Yes, I've seen one.
Okay,
yeah.
The front part of the torpedo is the warhead. I guess that's about a 3 or 4 foot long section. Like I don't know, whatever it is. But we would paint on there, "Happy birthday to Tojo," and we'd paint our girlfriends' names on there. "Love from Mary," "Love from Bernie," "Love from Ellen." I guess on the Pacuda, I painted love from. I was in love with a girl named Ellen McDermott on Long Island at that time, and I painted "To Tojo with Love" from Ellen McDermott. Right. This was just a nothing thing that we had during the war. Crazy. You know, we're 19, 20 years old. What else could we do?
You had to entertain yourself some way.
Right. So what was your normal day like? If you had an 8-hour shift, then what did you do on your shift, and then what did you do after for recreation?
Well, if you weren't qualified, you'd have to hit the books and go.
That's what I mean. You got to tell her what qualified is now.
When you go aboard submarines, they give you so many months to qualify from the bow to the stern. You're supposed to know everything. In case something happens and you're there, you can take over. Okay?
Okay.
And you got to qualify when you first get on board. So.
Yep. He means with all the valves and levers and everything like that and switches and stuff, you have to know just about every one of them and know which one to turn on, off, open, shut, in case something happens.
So during your 8-hour shift, if there was nothing else going on, you were studying?
Studying or else?
Studying. We read.
Or go to bed. Get some rest.
Yeah, we take books to read.
Because you could be called out at any time, right?
Sure, any time you had an attack on a convoy or something like that. Yeah. Battle stations.
When you were studying to qualify, they wanted you to be able to take over any position they needed you on?
Right.
Okay. And what happens if you didn't qualify?
Well, then they kicked you off the boat.
Yeah, you would be gone then. You were given enough time to study. And, I would say, I can't recall a heck of a lot of guys losing out and being kicked off. Although I do remember one. What the heck was the guy's name? I can see the guy's face and I can't think of his name. Well, anyway, we lost one guy. I can't think of his name, no. Forget it.
So would they get a discharge then? A dishonorable discharge?
Well, no, they transfer to surface craft.
No, He'd go some other part of the Navy.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You know, we looked at ourselves as a cut above everybody else like that. Just like the fly boys did, the aviators.
Right.
They thought they were a cut above everybody, too.
As far as I'm concerned, submarines are just a different Navy, too.
Yeah, you're right.
Your officers are you can speak to them, you know, we're there. Surface craft, you almost have to put a ship to talk to the guy.
Oh.
Your skippers and everything, they're human.
Mm-hmm. So you guys on subs were pretty proud of their duty.
Oh, you bet.
You absolutely. That's the one thing. Now, Jan, I'm going to tell you one thing here before I forget. I only came face to face with one chap during the entire war. This was on the Pakuda. We picked up. We passed through an area. I guess it was just off the northern coast of Luzon Island in the Philippine Islands in August of 1944. And there were a whole mess of people in the water in life jackets like that. And they were Japanese soldiers. The boat in one of the boats in our pack, they were in submarine packs at that time, had sunk a ship a day or two before that. And all these soldiers were in the water. And we passed through this area, I guess just before sunrise. It was still not quite light, dark. We heard all this yelling in the water close by. And we slowed down, and we turned a searchlight on, and you could see that there were people in the water here like that. And we beckoned to come anybody wanted to come aboard. But they were Japanese soldiers, and they were... I guess they were led to believe that whatever we do to them, if we ever pick them up like that, they looked at us as demons, devils, or whatever you want to call it like that. But this one guy, this one little soldier, he had enough of being in salt water. He was all raw under his armpits where the life jacket had rubbed on him like that. He wanted to come aboard, so we pulled him aboard. And we had him. The farmer's mate took care of him. His arms, under his arms, his armpits were all raw from the life jacket and the salt water. But we only had him a day or two, and we transferred him to another boat in our pack that was returning to Pearl Harbor. And I always wondered what the heck happened to this little guy like that, because he was a little guy. And he looked like he didn't know much. He didn't speak any English or nothing, so we couldn't get nothing out of him.
So how was he treated as a prisoner?
Oh, they treat him pretty good.
Oh, yeah, we fed him. He ate whatever we had, like that.
They usually volunteer to do the mess cooking.
Well, I tell you, I wouldn't trust him being a mess cook or not. No.
Well, they were some of them. We had about four or five of them on the Finback.
Oh, mess cook.
Good job, yeah.
Oh, well, not Japs.
Japs.
You had four or five? Oh, I don't remember that. I know, I know. This one guy, we kept him back in the air to torpedo him, and we kept him what they called the boatswain's locker. If there was nobody going to watch him or nothing, he was always chained up. And we'd walk him up forward to the mess hall, which is another 100 feet forward of where we were in the after part of the boat, to get something to eat, and then we'd bring him back aft again.
So it sounds like they wouldn't have had any complaints when they left the ship the way you treated them.
I don't think so. I think they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Back when I made a Westpac trip on the USS Volador after the war, about 1950, there was a whole bunch of all the buildings that were tied up. They're all bombed out. And then people would want to come aboard and do all the dishes for us. And we put the garbage in big flour cans or coffee cans or whatever. And they'd grab that thing and go up in the building and feed the rest of their crew.
Oh.
Garbage.
Huh. It's probably the best they had, huh?
The best they had, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. So you guys said you made some pretty good friends during your days in the war. Did you keep up with those guys over the years?
Oh, yeah, a lot of guys I still write to on in a computer or so forth. Exchange Christmas cards. We have we're known as the submarine veterans of World War II.
Oh yeah, listen, Jan, you got to on the email. You got to send me a mailing address. And everything about, I'm going to get you into our organization. It's U.S. Submarine Veterans World War II as an honorary member. They have other honorary members in there for something like this. But this, I'm going to see if I can get you in, and you'll get a nice certificate or something.
Oh, that's awfully nice. I don't think I'm really worthy, though. But I'm interested in finding out what your organization's all about.
Yeah. Well, they have another group that didn't make any war patrols. They're called Submarine Veterans Incorporated.
Oh, okay.
But we're all one group.
And so do you guys have reunions or any kind of activity?
Every year it's a shift. Last year was in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Oh. And then where this year?
There's going to be two more, and they want the last one in Jersey City, because that's where it all started.
Well, they would go to Florida, except it's too cold down there.
Yeah, it has been cold.
No, I'll tell you, but like he said, we're all dying off now. I'm 85, and I'm probably on the youngest end of some of these guys. Some of these guys are in their 90s like that. So we had a reunion in Orlando, and we had 4,000 people there, if you're counting wives and submarine guys.
Wow.
And now, what do you get, Harry? About 400? You get, if you're lucky, you get...
It's going down.
At the National.
In fact, the last Sub-Vets magazine I got, there was 3 pages of obits.
Oh, yeah.
So we're dying all fast.
That's sad.
I just turned 86 yesterday.
Oh, well, happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
But you... Yesterday?
Yeah.
Oh, you owe me a beer. Son of a gun, you...
I don't drink, George.
Oh, well, I do.
George got bad habits.
No, not a bad habit, no. No, I'm hooked on Bud Light. I have it with dinner.
Well, it sounds like you two are doing pretty well.
Oh, yeah. George and I go out for breakfast twice a week and dinner twice a week. And we go to Sub-Vets Incorporated meeting once a month.
You know, we both lost our wives about the same time. And that's a tough thing to do. I always thought I'd be the first to go, but it didn't pan out that way. And I lost my wife in May of 2007.
Mm-hmm.
When did that make?
2 days before Christmas, 2007.
Oh yeah.
And yeah. I just lost my youngest son.
The third
of January here. He was 59.
Oh, what happened to him?
Well, we don't really know whether he had a heart attack or we're supposed to get an answer in the next day or two.
Oh, that's sad. I'm really sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Beautiful guy. Big.
Now, listen, Jan, don't get any idea now you're going to hang up now because I'm going to hold on to you while I got you here. Every June 19th, that was the day that the S-27 sank, I talk on the phone to one of our cooks, our ship's cooks. He's in Illinois, and he's a little bit older than I am. I mean, I guess he's close to 90 now. But we never fail to talk on June 19th of every year.
That's amazing.
Yeah, right, yeah. Amazing, I guess, yeah, that we're still living.
Is that Al Jacobson?
Is what now?
Is that Al Jacobson? Oh, no, that was...
Listen, I never met Al Jacobson. Al Jacobson is the one that was in charge of the 3 PBY aircraft that came to pick us up after they located us, after they found us on Amchitka.
Oh, okay.
They found us on the 24th of June, and that was when the PBY guy, Julius Raven, he found us. He just... flew over there by accident almost, just to get a bearing so he could get back to Dutch Harbor. And the next day, 3 more aircraft came back and picked the rest of us up. And what was amazing about this, Kiska was just over the horizon, only about 25 minutes flying time from where we were. So they had to get in and out of there quick to get us out of there. And Al Jacobson was the one in charge of the flight of 3 aircraft. I'm on email with him occasionally, but he's getting old. I guess he's up in his 90s, and I don't hear from him much anymore.
Yes.
But I've never met any of these guys. I'm in touch with 2 or 3 guys that were involved in our rescue, the flyers, but I've never met them face-to-face. I have to sometime, but I don't know. We're all getting old. I'm 85, and I'm probably the youngest than most of these guys.
Hmm. And who's the cook that you talk to?
What's that now?
Who's the cook that you talk to?
Oh, gee, what the heck is it? See, that's old age now. I have that right in the tip of my tongue. He's a second-class ship's cook, and he lives in Depew, Illinois. And I'm going to have to send you his name on email. What the heck is his name?
You'll think of it after you hang up.
Yeah, one thing I think George mentioned, though, when you serve on fleet boats, fleet submarines, you got two stills that makes 40 gallons of water a day, an hour, and you got to use all that water for cooking and watering batteries. So if you made a 30-day patrol or an 89-day patrol, you never got a bath.
Oh, wow, I never thought about that.
You can brush your teeth and wash your face, that's it.
That's not very much water for all those people.
Not much water. No.
Well, we made water.
Yeah, you made water, but
yeah.
There was enough water, you had to use it for watering the batteries and cooking.
Yeah.
So that sub must have gotten pretty ripe after a time.
Well, you all smell the same way, so...
But I bet you were sure happy to have that first shower.
Well, first thing you got when you got off the boat, when you got into Pearl, or they give you a couple of cans of beer and you're feeling your alcohol by then because you can't take that. You haven't had any sun for 60, 70 days.
Yeah.
So the alcohol hits you pretty quick.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah. Now, these nuclear boats, you can take a shower anytime you want, wash your
right.
clothes.
The best thing with the Royal Hawaiian, sleeping between sheets, between clean sheets. That was the best thing.
Oh, I bet. I bet those nuclear subs are pretty plush compared to what you guys were in.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say, they're making babies out of these guys. They're great sailors, and they know just what to do. They're all engineering-type people, but they're not sailors like we were back then. I hate to say that, but that's just my impression.
Well, the sailors now, that you know, they hear about our exploits in World War II. Well, they all really look up to us.
Yeah, let me tell you a funny story. I went aboard a nuclear boat in the late 90s, 1997, that stopped down here at Cape Canaveral. And they treated us to dinner like that. They served us pizza, and they served us ice cream. Ice cream, strawberry shortcake for dessert. I'm saying, what the heck are we in here, a hotel? What is this? You guys go to sea and have this stuff like that? Like it was nothing to them.
Yeah, they had it good compared to you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
we do a little bit of bragging, Jan. We can't help that. I get that with inbred in a submarine sailor.
Well, I was just thinking, you guys didn't get mail very often then either.
No, I never came by a mail boy.
Nope.
There's no mail boys out there. You got your mail when you got back at port.
Yeah, so you didn't have a lot of communication about what was happening.
No, I didn't. When we pulled into Perth, Australia, that's when I found out I had a brand new son.
Oh,
that
boy.
Was May 1945.
Did your wife have any idea where you were?
Oh, you were married then.
I was married then, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I don't know if she had any idea because if you wrote a letter and tried to tell her where that, it was all blanked out.
And didn't they have like a fleet post office that that family mailed to, so it was didn't know where you were?
They didn't know where the mail was gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, do you guys have any remembrances of any particularly memorable events during World War II?
Well, I think the hardest part is some of the guys that went through recruit training and went into submarines with, and you found out that they went down on some submarine. You took it pretty hard. Yeah.
And
I know at submarine school, I know two of them went down. One of them, his name was Al Ullman. He went down on the Grunion, and I'm sure you know about the Grunion. That was the one boat that they lost up there off Kiska.
Yeah, they're in our calendar this year.
What's that now?
They're in our calendar this year.
They're on
what
the calendar this
the,
year.
The 2010 Aleutian World War II calendar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did I send you one?
No, those are our calendars. I sent one to you.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I am getting mixed up here. you.
January should be the Grunion.
That's right, the Grunion, right. Then you do know that, yeah. Yeah. Well, then you know Mary.
Yes, I do.
You've never met her, though, have you?
No,
I've met both you girls. I call you both my girlfriends from afar. Now, where are we talking to you right now? You're not in Dutch Harbor.
No, I'm in Anchorage.
Where?
Yeah, in Anchorage.
Anchorage,
yeah. Okay, what's your temperature there?
It's about 10.
10 degrees?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Are you a skier?
Yes.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good on you. Good. That's I can ice skate. I played a lot of hockey, but I never could master skis. I tried when I was a younger man, but I never could do that. Of course, I can now with a leg, I bet you're a beauty on skis, Jan. I'll bet you that.
Oh, no, I'm pretty clumsy, but I get by.
both you kids too. Your husband too, he's probably a skier too.
He doesn't ski so much anymore. He works pretty hard, so he likes to relax when he's finished.
Oh, good on him. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Any fishermen?
Yes. Yes, definitely. And we have we own airplanes. So that's how we get around.
Yeah.
He owns airplanes?
Well, actually they're mine. I was a pilot before I met him. I got my pilot's license when I was in my 20s.
Oh, now listen. Do you know that I was before I got hurt, I got a private pilot's license at Prescott Municipal Airport in New Hampshire in 1947. And this is before I had the automobile accident. And I only had about 120 hours altogether. And when I had this accident, and after I got out of the hospital and out of the Navy, I tried again at a private airport on Long Island, but I could never use the heel brakes or the toe brakes. Now you know what they are.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Back to here. I could never, because I couldn't move my left foot up and down. My ankle was paralyzed, so that was out. I couldn't use brakes at all, so I had to give it up.
That's
but I did. I flew when they built Luscombe aircraft back in 1946,
47,
48.
Uh-huh.
I flew a Luscombe 8 and a stint. The biggest aircraft I ever flew was a Stinson. Stinson Voyager. I think they have 145 horsepower. I'm not sure now. I'm forget so long ago.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But that was my short stint of being a private pilot.
Yeah. It's fun flying.
Yeah, right. But you do fly now.
I do, yeah. My husband actually doesn't. I do all the flying.
Oh, good on you. Good. You got to tell me more about that on your emails now. I'd love to hear about that or about what I missed.
Well, you guys did something I don't think I could do. Being in a sub, when we were just on our vacation this year, we went on two different subs that were at museums, and I just thought, I just don't know how you guys do it.
Well, I'll tell you, if you ever get down here to Canaveral area, Cape Canaveral, I'm sure me and Harry could get you on one of the nuclear boats for a day trip out there. After all you've done for our part of the deal here.
Very few boats come in here now, George.
Well, they don't come in anymore. Oh, sugar. Well, another thing we lost.
They're up in Georgia.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Oh, at the St. Mary's subbase?
Right.
Okay.
That's a big setup up there.
Yeah, I never got to see that. I wanted to get down there this year on our trip, and we didn't get down there.
You're right. I'm still taking you guys to dinner when you get near here again, so just be careful.
Well, we might get down there again. My husband occasionally works for Pratt & Whitney.
Oh, yeah.
And they're building that Joint Strike Fighter, and he's helping them with their test cell and testing some of their components. So we were there last year, and they might have him come again.
Yeah, now listen, if I ever win Lotto, the first thing I'm going to do is fly to Anchorage and take you guys to dinner.
he'll probably take you to Wendy's, though. You better watch it.
Get out of here. No. Now, well, listen, don't get any ideas of hanging up on us yet. I just keep asking questions. I know there's stuff you're going to think, I should have done this, I should have asked on this. But if you got something there, anything, anything.
Well,
before I close, how we did this, that, and the other thing.
I have hundreds of questions for you guys. I just I don't want to keep you too long, but I would like to ask.
What do we got to do here? We both lost the wife. We're retired. What do we got to do to talk to a young lady? Best thing in the world.
Well, I just would like to ask if you have any other memories from the war that kind of stuck with you.
To think a minute here like that.
Sometimes you're pretty jumpy. You're still
I won't get into
depth charges.
Depth charges, yeah. They were frightening. You didn't want the guy next to you to know that you were tight. You were holding up. You were shaking inside. The worst thing in the world was to let the other guy know that you were a little bit leery about not getting out of this alive. You know, you've seen these submarine movies of the German sailors on the U-boats getting depth charged. Well, it's just about the same thing like that. The lights would blink and whatever. But the main thing was don't let the guy know that's standing next to you that you might be a little bit afraid. Keep showing that bravado, bit like, hey, don't worry about it. Nothing will happen. You're going to get home to see your mother again. Don't worry about it. You understand what I'm talking about.
Keep a stiff upper lip.
Yeah, right.
It must have been awfully frightening, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it was. It was. You never knew when the next one was coming from, how close they were going to get. And
as long as they were above you and not below you when they exploded, you're fine.
You're right. If one got below you, you might have been in trouble. But alongside of you, they might have scared the hell out of you like that and shook you. But the lights blink. But it's just like in the movies, the same thing. The same thing. But just don't let the other guy know you're afraid. Keep that a secret.
Have you read any of the submarine books?
No, I've seen some of the movies, but what would be a good one to read?
The USS Tang, Clear the Bridge.
Okay.
Yeah, and another one is Take Her Deep.
Take Her Deep?
Take Her Deep, yeah. Tang will give you an idea of what we were doing out there.
Tang is T-A-N-G?
T-A-N-G, right.
Okay.
And they're usually in paperback at the library.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, another thing. I asked you before, send me a mailing address. I'm going to send you some submarine magazines our organization puts out a print every couple of months, and I got a bunch of these from down through the years. I'm going to send them to you.
Okay.
Understand?
Okay.
And I'm going to force you to look at them.
Okay. Well, I'd probably enjoy looking at them.
I got a lot of them all over the house here.
Okay.
And just send me a mailing address. And I'll have them to you. You can see just what our organization did.
Okay.
A lot of different stories in there. And in fact, that S-27 story, you've read that. Everybody in the world has read that. I pumped that out so many times like that. They're getting tired of hearing about it.
That's a great story.
There's a different type of, so a lot worse than ones I got.
You did a great job writing that up.
What's that now?
You did a great job writing that up.
Oh, well, I'm not an author. I just wish my parents could have seen that, but they weren't around to see it, so that's just the end of that. Like, but make sure I get a mailing address, Jen.
Okay, I'll
so
email.
I can send you this stuff.
I'll email you.
Okay, good, good, good girl, good girl,
okay.
Good girl. And when you guys are down here. Well, if you ever do get down here again like that, don't say it's too far to Melbourne or shit. Come down here, and me and Harry will take you out for some steaks.
Okay, that sounds good.
Don't forget now.
We can't give you any moose steaks, though.
Well, we get those at home, so that's okay.
The best meat I ever had was that moose steak.
Is that right? Where'd you get that at?
It's my stepmother's son-in-law went up to Canada, and he come back with it.
Oh.
That was just beautiful.
We have a freezer full of it. I have some for lunch, in fact.
Oh, boy.
We're pretty lucky that way.
Yeah.
But, well, I'll let you guys go. I've had you on the phone like an hour and 45 minutes. You're probably...
Well, listen, I hate to let you go now. You know, well, I'm a New Yorker. Forget it.
We can talk again.
You're going to say, thank God that old guy hung up.
No, we can talk again.
Okay. Yeah, but just give me a mailing address, and I'm going to send you some magazines that of our organization.
Okay.
That's World War II.
Okay.
Okay?
Well, thank you so much both for spending time with me today. It was just a pure pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah. Now, listen, you sure there's nothing more now? Because I don't want you to say, geez, I should have asked them that. But this, anything.
Well,
like that.
Well, can I call you back or send you a note if I have other questions?
Sure. Listen, Jan, you call me any time in the world.
Okay.
You give me an email and say what time you're going to call, and I'll be sitting by the phone here.
You know, because as soon as I go back through this, I often see the missed opportunities to ask questions, so I might take you up on that and give you a call back.
Right on.
Well,
okay.
Well, you two have a great day today, and thank you again for taking the time to spend
listen,
with me.
I'm going to make Harry buy me dinner.
He owes me one.
He's got
fish hooks on the end of his fingers.
Okay, Jan.
All right, bye now.
Okay, we love you, girl.
Nice talking to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.